Now that state lawmakers are back at work, what exactly are they going to be working on to get some foresight into what's ahead this legislative year? I'm joined by a man that knows far more than most about what kinds of plans are being brewed up at the Capitol, Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter. Kyle, thanks for joining us this evening.
My pleasure, Michael.
Okay, so real quickly, I know you've said that the elimination of the business personal property tax will likely not happen until after the November election. Although, are we basically going to, is it going to happen, do you think? And if so, is it very likely going to happen without a permanent funding replacement for municipalities?
Well, I think that it is going to pass, and it may actually pass sooner than the election. The Senate is interested in getting this through before their summer recess at the end of June, beginning of July. The Senate Finance Committee is going to start holding hearings on this tomorrow, and the chair said he's interested in holding as many as three hearings next week, so that there is interest in moving for the immediate repeal of this personal property tax on industrial equipment. I mean, this is like printing presses and dye machines and these types of things that businesses pay a significant amount of money to local governments for.
Should municipalities be bracing themselves that there will not be a replacement?
There will be a replacement. It's going to be what is being proposed right now is something that in the end equals about 81% of what the tax brings in right now. It brings in about $400 million. What the bills that the Senate introduced today do is create a pool of money from which municipalities can draw from to replace the revenue that has been lost.
Although that will be on a permanent basis, or is that just...
It will be on a permanent basis, and once this tax phases out, there's a phase-out component. It's not going to go away immediately except for people that are businesses that pay a very small amount of personal property tax on industrial equipment. That will go away at the end of this year under mm-hmm. this bill. For the more expensive pieces, which is about 70 to 75% of this tax, that will start getting phased out in the year 2016.
Wow, that's quite a distance away, so thankfully it's not all happening at once. Kyle, I want to ask you about this budget process that's about to take center stage. Do you really expect lawmakers to do any resisting, or are they likely going to accept the way the Snyder administration allocates the surplus?
I think that there isn't going to be a lot of fight. The legislature in both the House and the Senate have been more pessimistic than the governor on how much money that is actually available. And so there's actually some cuts that are being made to some budgets in the Senate and the House, particularly in the area of community health and the Department of Human Services. And so it'll be interesting, and corrections as well. So it'll be interesting to see if those cuts make it through the process. There isn't a lot of change in the legislature. Governor Snyder wanted to have some type of strings attached to the money that universities and school districts receive. And the legislature has changed those, or in some cases eliminated them. So I think that's something to be to watch. I also think the amount of money that is given to K through 12 education is going to be very interesting to watch. There was an increase in the Senate. The House doesn't have one right now yet. And obviously Snyder wants a little bit. And so I'm going to be interested that this is an election year for the House, mm-hmm. and I got to believe they'd really like to campaign on giving the schools a little bit more money.
I'm talking to Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter. So, Kyle, there was a committee hearing today talking about these proposed voting regulations. Voting advocacy groups say that this is a part of a nationwide campaign. In fact, the American Legislative Exchange Council, otherwise known as ALEC, is apparently behind some of these efforts. It makes you wonder in general how much influence on our legislation here in Lansing is coming from outside of the state. Tell me, do we know just how much ALEC is involved?
Well, ALEC is an organization that is funded by corporate donations, and it's kind of a conservative think tank of sort on a national scale, and it's where conservatives and some Republicans go to get ideas for future legislation. And one of the services that ALEC provides is kind of like draft bills. If you like an idea that is being talked about at ALEC, here's a draft bill. Go ahead and take it to your state and tailored it to your law. And that is something that some Republicans in this state take advantage of. Obviously, the Democrats cry foul because they see a direct connection between corporate money and the legislative process. But really, this is kind of I hate to say this, Michael, but it's kind of how sausage gets made here in this town. There's very few pieces of bills that just get written, on a piece of paper by a lawmaker who just thinks this is a great idea. You know, a lot of the bills that move through the legislature were drafted by somebody else who gave them to a lawmaker and said, "Hey, here, this is a good idea."
By somebody else, you mean a group of lawyers? And so, where does that leave lawmakers? Because these are highly detailed, complex bills. A lot of times, having looked at a few, I can hardly make sense of them. So they're arguing for bills that they sometimes may not know really anything about.
It happens. Now, I mean, the sharp ones, though, get significantly briefed by the interest group, and they go through the bill and find out exactly what it does and go line by line. And, because when you're negotiating on a certain piece of legislation, you got to know what's in it, so you know what to give on and what not to give on. So the good lawmakers, are properly briefed, and obviously they're not going to sign on to a bill they don't agree with.
Let me ask you this. On the Democratic side, is there an equivalent? Do we see the same kind of thing happening on that side?
As far as interest groups, I mean, obviously the unions have a big stake in what kind of legislation they'd like to see passed. But as far as like a comparable thing to ALEC, no, not really. I mean, there's the National Conference of State Legislatures. That's more nonpartisan. But there isn't a Democratic equivalent, no.
I want to ask you, too, about this F letter grade we got for our transparency in government in a recent report. And apparently the likelihood for some potential corruption. How problematic is that here in Lansing? Legislators, and I know the Democrats have proposed legislation to increase that and to limit involvement of former lawmakers in the system. Mm-hmm. How much of that is really happening right now, and how much is that influencing our legislation?
Not much. To be perfectly honest, I mean, you're talking about former legislators going into the lobbying corps and then trying to push something on their former colleagues?
Basically, yep. And in the general lack of insight we have into how much influence is being put on lawmakers?
I don't think it's a heck of a lot. I mean, the revolving door that we hear about as far as legislators retiring from the, getting termed out of the legislature and then falling into the lobbying corps, I think it's kind of an overblown problem in the public. I mean, every year there's a couple, there's one or two, maybe three, but it's not a widespread problem. And those lawmakers who are put in office, they're new. I mean, they didn't know that person when they were a legislator, so they don't have any allegiance to them. And so these lawmakers who are now, lobbyists have to fly by their own talent. Yeah, I mean, if they're able to successfully lobby, they'll get it through.
Although the new lawmakers know far less about just about everything.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, right. That is true.
Let me ask you about what Democrats are going to be up to this year. We saw what happened last year, which was it kind of looked like they were standing on the sidelines. They've proposed this 2020 plan. I know State Representative Mark Meadows wants to use the surplus to eliminate the new tax on pensions. But really, do any of these proposals go anywhere? Are they just going to sit back and, watch the show this year again?
Yeah, I mean, any proposals that come out of the Democrats of any substance, and you mentioned two right there, are basically just talking points to get their message out this year. The 2020 plan, that has no future this session. It's just something that the Democrats can hang their hat on and say, this is an idea we have for improving this state. And the same thing with returning the exemption for pension income. That's, again, just something that the Democrats want to put out there as something that they would do if they were in power and something that would, they hope, help them in the upcoming election.
And what about this year's election in the House? Is it going to be in any way consequential? Do you expect the Republican majority to be in any way diminished?
I think that the Republican majority will take a little bit of a hit. I think that's kind of unavoidable. There are some vulnerable Republican incumbents out there, but I don't think there's enough to actually swing the tide back to the Democrats. You know, we have seen some pretty harsh swing elections here in 08 and in 2010, but I think the economy's kind of stabilized here in this state and nationally. And unless there's some type of economic panic between now and November, let's say $5 gas, $6 gas, or some kind of economic meltdown in Europe, that, you know, translates into massive job loss here, or, you know, a freak out back into a double dip or recession. I think that, I think we're on a steady path, and it's kind of hard to see the numbers work for a Democratic majority.
Okay, so the House stays Republican. Next time around, the Senate stays Republican. We're likely to see, what, 3, 4, 5 years of a majority being held here?
Well, yeah, the Senate's not up, so that'll be a Republican for sure. In the State House, that would be my prediction. But, you know, Democrats still got a shot. Obviously, they're going to give it a go. You know, federally, I mean, what's going to happen there, I think, is a totally different issue that I do also believe is predicated on what happens with the economy and those things that I just mentioned.
One last thing, the House seat being vacated by Joan Bauer. Obviously, of interest here in Lansing. Lansing City Councilmember Aileen Robinson announced last week that she herself is running. Is there any favorite to take the seat in your view?
Well, I think Andy Shore is the favorite right now. He's been out there raising money and has been campaigning for some time. Aileen Robinson does have, you know, some elected experience in just being on the ballot. She's got, you know, as long as Dale Kopich is on the ballot, though, I think that she's somewhat neutralized because both her and Kopich represent basically the same area there in southwest Lansing. You know, that's her base, that's his base. So they're kind of eat into each other's support, which, you know, kind of impacts both of them. They both kind of sink. And then you got Griffin Rivers in there, another African-American candidate who's going to be campaigning hard. He's raising money, too. He's got the support of some black pastors. So, you know, they kind of eat into each other's support. I think that plays well to Andy Shore, who's got at least $40,000 in the bank, which is a good chunk of change at this stage.
Kyle Malin, editor of MERS Newsletter. Kyle, very insightful. Hope to have you on again soon.
All right, very good.